So we have the investigation of distinctions between love, yearning, and desire already on the table. And is there anything else someone would like to share or ask? Could you say more about like the weirdness? You said need to open and your hands were like around here. Does that feel accurate? Mm-hmm. Around the chest area.
Yeah, it feels just like really guarded, like closed. So, yeah. Thanks for letting that just happen.
Yeah. Maybe that's also a nice example that you just gave us of what I'm talking about with the amoeba shift. So one way to talk about it is, oh, it's really guarded and closed. And the other is like a need to open, but you were speaking kind of from the openness, like, and it felt weird. There's something funny about the grass. Like it was something that didn't match your previous idea of yourself. Like the map and the actual world being different things. The map can, I mean, the world can contain the map, but the map doesn't contain the world. And it is weird to kind of quiet. And then the words that were coming were isolation and lonely. And a noticing that what I normally would feel juicy was like there was a noticeable disconnect feeling. And then you found your way to speak to us. And the same situation that could sound like a problem turns out to be part of a process that's in action. And part of that is the recognition of, like more clearly, a recognition of that state of isolation and loneliness as part of the breaking apart of that within the quietness, I would say. And you're nodding, so that's...
Yeah.
And it's really hard when we're in the time of the recognition of what doesn't work, what isn't alive for us, what hurts. Whether it's a kind of energetic reality of feeling isolated, or whether it's more in terms of a belief or assumption, if there's a difference in those things, to feel that as on its way, or potentially on its way, to what isolation isn't, what loneliness isn't. And I think in the moment of the recognition of isolation and loneliness, for example, when our self-talk is taking it personally, what have I done wrong? What have I done, have wasted my life, or whatever. The blame might go outside to someone else, whatever. Brené Brown, is that her name? My mind is not working that great. Yeah. She has a great observation that blame happens when we can't bear the pain. And so I think just the moment, just the pain of the recognition of that actual sense of isolation and loneliness, which could be like this, the livingness of like, oh, that doesn't fit. That's not what I'm made for. But then it hurts. The hurt has come alive. And easily we shoot out blame. Well, no, I don't know about mostly in. One of my teachers would say equally in and out. But we might notice more the inner, or we might notice more the outer. Some people's outer blame is more loud. Some people's inner blame is more loud. Maybe underneath it's the same. And so the disbelief that it's our fault, or anything other than just the like crystalline noticing of isolation, loneliness, and it hurts. And it's in friction with what I am, or whatever. Doesn't fit. And then I came across a cicada shell, and someone mentioned cicada. What is it? Exoskeleton. Okay, yeah. That are left behind and empty, and that kind of. Of them, yeah. I was so happy when I just saw one the other day. So the feeling that it doesn't fit as part of a coming out of the exoskeleton, coming out of the map that had somehow help, you know, held us in place in some way that might have served us for a while. But then it is just a map. So, does this start to make sense? I feel like I'm struggling to convey something obvious. No. So first of all, in case for some people it's easier to start, you have your example first and then you walk through the process. For some people, you walk through the process first and then you get your example. So why not try to think of an example for you of where there's a sense of lack? And this is the beginning of parsing want, yearn, and desire. A little bit, but from the same cooking pot. I love this word want. I think it reveals itself over time. We think of it as something more solid than I think it is. Like, I think it's more of a shadow than an object. And I think that in the word want, so the meanings of the word want, it's really about lack. So water is wanting in this landscape. There's a want of water. So the word want can literally mean, it can be a synonym of the word lack. And so that can be one kind of want that's more a repercussion of a sense of lack. So the sense of lack, when we buy into it, then like the whole force of our being goes for survival, to try to get what we feel is wrong or missing. So if you think like what you think is wrong with you or what's missing or what is wanting, if only that weren't there, then you'd be enlightened or whatever, or you'd be fine. Or find your example. Anyone want to give one?
Mine is, if only I knew everything. Then this thing wouldn't be a problem. That's literally what came up.
Yes. Yeah, that's good. So knowledge is wanting. There's a want of knowledge. Anyone else? Love is usually one. Somewhere, somehow. And sometimes even the want of knowledge really would be like, if I had all the knowledge, then I would be lovable and loved. But sometimes it's just knowledge. Just knowledge. sense of absence, a sense of a vacuum, a sense of isolation, loneliness, non-connection, disconnect. The craving is more both the feeling of something's missing and a compulsive movement. Compulsive not even being strong enough for a word.
That's something that's coming up here is conviction should be elsewhere.
Yeah.
Conviction should be something else.
Yeah.
It's bone hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Could y'all hear? Could you hear? Yes, and so the gift of that, the mother who said to her daughter at the end of the life, so that we could have some little gap in that bone-hard conviction, that we could go our whole life thinking something's wrong with me, or we could find another way. The discomfort for not that long, but it feels like it's going to kill us. But it's really like a pause of what if even feeling this huge disconnect and just lost in the world, what if it's not a problem? What if it's actually like this fundamental sort of crystalline noticing power of a phenomenon or a taste or flavor? So if we just broadly talk about this conviction that something's wrong with me, and when we buy into that, it feels real, it feels true. Does it feel good? Or does it feel bad? So this is where it gets easy. It doesn't feel good. Even though we're addicted, it doesn't feel good. Not past, not present, not future does it feel good. And it's, in a way, it's just like so touching and sweet that we're willing, because we think it's true, we're like willing to abide in that pain. Some kind of obedience to something. And we're just scrambling, doing our best to get off that sense of something wrong. Loyalty to how much suffering we keep on trying. And this shift of loyalty, like, from the pain to the healing. And the pain, when we are in touch with it, is like, yeah, I want healing too. But when pain means, this is a word I have made up, it means we're kick-outable. When we feel, we experience that something's wrong with me, that means I would be kicked out of everything if anybody knew. Or if even I admit to myself, depending on your personality. So there might be someone like who's like, I'm fine. And I'm feeling compassion for everyone who has all this suffering. Back another wonderful thing about slime mold today I'm so delighted to share with you. I think it was a lot in the 50s and maybe 60s that people did scientific experiments with slime molds. And I didn't know today, till today, even what a slime mold is, but even though I love them. And it's really cool what they are, like just the craziness of life. It's alive. And whether it's a they or an it, I don't even know, but if there's many. Without membranes, so there's not cell membranes, but there's the protoplasm, there's the liquid, and like lots and lots of nuclei. So like there would be like what would be in the center of the cell, and including the juice and the packet of sort of life information or whatever, but not membranes and lots of fluid. It's a living creature or creatures, community or whatever it is. I obviously have more studying to do. But even without knowing more about them, just if you want to just sometime after retreat, go on and search for slime mold maze experiments. Do you know what a maze is? So they have a maze for the slime mold to solve. And the end, the solution is where the food for the slime mold is, whatever they eat. And they're so good, so, so good at solving the mazes. How? They just pour themselves into it. They try everything, and what doesn't have food is not the answer. And they're done. They found the food and they're done. They just stick with that. That works. And it's just beautiful. It really is beautiful to watch. And over time, it really grows on you. Yes, JG.
Community that makes up the soil that holds up all the trees, they're finding that mold or whatever it is.
Yeah, the whatever it is.
Whatever they call it is actually, what is it, when they're
symbiotic.
Symbiotic,
yeah.
With the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard some about this, that they really basically haven't. They're just starting to investigate.
Yes.
It's everywhere in the soil. And basically, it's the basic support system for all the trees. And so all the trees are networked via this mold.
Yeah.
Now, it was described to me on the program, and I realized walking up the hill where someone has dug out new campsites, just like 2 or 3 inches into the soil, you see all this white stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And the stuff that's dug up, and these, you know, you'll see off to the left and right these new little avenues or like, you know, whatever, tent sites that they pulled the top of the soil off and exposed the mold, and what was on top dried out. And it's white. You'll see it white sitting on the soil. But you'll also see that underneath it's living and it's white strands, and it's, you know, they don't really know how to describe it or explain it. But it's alive, and what it's doing is supplying the trees with sugars that they need.
Watch watching some BBC documentaries about the ocean with my kids and my dad and his wife. And everybody was just like, wow. But, and because it is really wow. And they say, like, every time they go down to the deep ocean, they discover new species. So it, and, but what's funny to me is that they talk about this is the last frontier. This is the only place left on Earth that's, you know. It's like, what about our gut, you know? Like, there we... So another thing about the slime molds is that there was a botanist in the 50s, let me just double check his name, William Seyfries, and he was observing the slime mold under a microscope, and he saw that the fluid had a rhythm that went first in one direction for 50 seconds and then in the other direction for 50 seconds. No matter what he did to it, like, he would inject toxins and they were still like, even if we're dying, we're just moved in this way. And he even, like, anesthesia, some kind of anesthetic he put in there, and they're still moved. So not because they felt something necessarily and reacted to it, but from some other way, maybe from within. And in the craniosacral work that I mentioned yesterday, they also talk about a 50 second, they call it the long tide. And they also talk about it as a kind of respiration. But similarly, something that, whether we would practice tuning into that specifically, or if we would practice tuning in to some other, rather than that rhythm, some other aspect of that same kind of experience or frequency or whatever, which we've already mentioned here, where sometimes you might feel some kind of stillness or happiness or expansiveness or brightness. Or so just the kind of, there's the quieting, and then whatever is possible to be noticed now, which sometimes is some kind of conditioning, some kind of way we've been shaped by our experience. It could be a feeling of isolation, for example, or that something's wrong with me. And in that moment of meeting, the possibility that that can be a first love meeting, rather than proof that something really is, no wonder I'm in isolation. So isolated that there must be something wrong with me. Therefore, like, it's, you know, this impossible, also illogical, self-reinforcing space. But if it's kind of like, huh, interesting that it, why does it not feel good if it would be true? Why would it not feel good? Like, what is the not feeling good response doing in the human being? And so I think of that as the slime mold touching something and finding, oh, that's not food, and continuing to flow and spread. Knowing the scent of food, or knowing meaning what it is about, is let's get some food. And for us, so many kinds of food. So one of the difficult parts of this shift, the amoeba shift, I don't know why I call it the amoeba shift when it's really inspired by the slime molds, but amoeba is easier to say. And maybe somehow because it's got the me sound in the middle, amoeba. I don't know, but it is easier to say. That might be is more basic and how good that the base has some intelligence in it. That we could be moved by. And sometimes we come into the quiet and the movement might be towards resolving some tangle. And sometimes the movement might be towards enjoying the unfolding of a gift, for example. Or just including the gift of just silence and not needing to do anything, no demand. Or just beauty anyway. So just if you feel yourself saying or kind of acting as if I could blank, then. Anyone want to fill in a blank? Yeah. Yeah. So what the funny thing about the ego, it's so kind of cute. In thinking, the way it thinks about itself, thinking that it's the one thing that's sort of outside of nature or outside of causes and conditions, outside of the web of life. Yesterday we talked about hubris and Icarus as our example, and I felt more and more what a good example. If I remember correctly, he was the cause of an innocent person's death before his accidental death. Well, he actually caused his own death too, but does anyone know the full story? I'm pretty sure he was the... He purposely caused an accidental death of someone that he was jealous of, and then also unpurposely caused his own accidental death. So some kind of break with honoring the web of life and not taking that on like, whoa, I did that. Those forces of jealousy got me, and I did that. And then what helps kind of get things back into alignment from here, from bearing the pain of having done that and not making it be like the most also dramatic thing ever, the specialness of being so wrong, but yet. And I think that when there are the breaks from the web of life, so feeling guilty, feeling ashamed, feeling denying hurts that we've caused, then it's really easy to get caught up in the sense of what we have to work with here is will. And so even the kind of, instead of that idea of Descartes, who was a sick man, but anyway, we went with it anyway. Instead of I think, therefore I am, it's kind of like I will, therefore I can. I will fly, therefore I can, and then we fall. And I think that where's that sense of, if I could get rid of my ego, then I'd be fine. Not allowing that ego is not something that I actually made or have the right to kill. I don't know, understand it. Whose is it? But when I'm kind of in denial, my blinders are on. I'm scrambling to get rid of this sense of lack. And I'm projecting the cause of my sense of lack on the ego. I'm projecting. It gets projected. And what we then seem to need to use is will. And just reversing the sentence, what can I do? And then will I? Instead of I will, therefore I can, which ends up in disaster. I can, and then will I? So then we're more stuck with what can I do? What's possible? What's actually possible here with what there is? The same situation. What can I do? And this is also a shift from what I should do to what can I do? And then a second very difficult part is, will I? Not the willpower, but the willingness to be moved. So what they find is from this rhythm that's there, even when there's toxins, even when there's disruptions, even when there's inability to feel, maybe with anesthetics. So we could say one manifestation would be this rhythm of fluids. Other manifestations are a sense of safety and a kind of streaming light or love, or just a kind of inspiration that they find comes through the midline, just being moved in a way that turns out to be healing. So there, it's examples from this very intricate and rigorous, you know, type of practice, but that really rhyme with what we can find in our everyday experience. We can. And I find one of the important parts of kind of like finding ourselves in our network, the web of life, in something that is organized in some way, though it's also dynamic, is really giving myself to myself. So sometimes when there's a feeling of disconnect and isolation and loneliness, naturally, and also there, we have a need, we are mammals, and we don't live in isolation. Like, nothing lives in isolation, but as mammals, there's a certain extra dimension to that. Warmth and vocalization and contact. But so it might be counterintuitive, the feeling of isolation, giving myself to myself. One of my teachers used to say time and again, give 1 second to yourself. And then he would say, give half a second to yourself. And then he would say, half the half. Give half the half second to yourself. Just some way of dipping into life somewhere that we thought was poisoned or beyond. Or finding or something. Were you going to say something?
Just around the can thing. What can I do? I get confused around it because the mind gets involved.
Yeah. Especially with what Jesse was bringing up yesterday about, I think you also mentioned, of, what was the phrase you said? It was you that said, I think, yesterday.
In the meeting.
Know what you want, or get out there and make it happen. Something like that.
Is it
me? Yeah, I think so. Well, anyway, that sort of do it, just do it thing. So that's good to clarify. When I'm saying I can, what can I do? What can be? So it's tuning into the potential. And tuning into the potential, oh yeah, there's some permission to that, even in the worst case scenario, all is not lost. We can still walk out of the jail. It might not, in the outer reality, look like me doing anything. It might be my friends come and pull me out. Right. Or it might be I go and pull me out or them out or whatever. Or it might just be I go have a glass of water. But coming out of that, like, smoky haze of what should be, without a shutting down, like, oh, well, never mind, nothing is possible. Just because I can't live up to my sense of obligation and should, and I take that as something wrong, instead of a discovery, that the sense of obligation is not fitting. There's one teaching that calls it a mark of shame upon your forehead. The sense that you must. And we're more likely to feel ashamed that we didn't hit the mark, what we expected, or. And so to let it turn around. There's a lovely poem by a Zen teacher, Lou Hartman. And it's awakening from a dream or from within a dream. I fall into my own arms. What took you so long? Teachers. There would be certain periods that were very desert-like. I would ask a question or just ask for some reassurance, and the answer would just be, at most. Or it might be like turning on the TV, like checking the cricket score or whatever. Or sometimes you'd be like, keep going. And I, just yesterday, in our talking about trust, I realized how good of a training that was towards trust. So it was a certain time where I was ready for that, what felt like a desert to me. The lack of reassurance that I'm going fine. Like, because keep going for him might be, yep, you're just about to fall off the cliff, and then you'll pick yourself up and start over somehow. You know, like it's not like keep going, you're doing so great, you're near the finish line, or something like that. Keep going. But which was a trust, is a trust in me, in my own power of discovery. And what specifically was happening in this time period that I'm thinking of, was that I wasn't going to stop practicing just because I was near despair and he didn't reassure me. I was still going to keep practicing. Even though I felt like at the end of my rope and so hopeless and like, oh my God, I'm never going to, whatever. But I wasn't going to stop. And so it was so helpful, like all those years of like, keep going. Or maybe rest more. And so that was another kind of thirst that was hard but good. That was a time where I could experience the thirst for reassurance as potentially a cause for suffering. And if he would have bought into it, like if he thought he owed me anything and had answered me from his wisdom instead of like pushing me back to my own camel and my own little bit of water that I loved. That would not go well. And just the feeling of the kindness of that. Chögyam Trungpa talks about the teacher or friend like calling or luring us into the desert of egolessness. Come on. The water's fine. But the kindness of that is also so such just an impersonal happening. Like it was very much fitting to me in that moment. It was proper, the proper response, which I'm thankful is now that period is over. For now. It was like very much specifically fitting me. But it wasn't like a personal thing. That he was like personally on a mission to like break me of my dependence on outward reassurance. It was just happening that words weren't coming other than, do you want some tea? Or, But we can find when we get in tune with some deeper rhythm, and they talk about that particular in craniosacral being that stable rhythm, just like in the slime molds, no matter what. It's the movement of something deeper than what we think of as even biology, because it's like, even if I'm being killed, I'm still being moved. The fluids is being moved. It's the fluids. So sometimes that thirst that would it be quenched would be suffering, would be entanglement, is so hard to deny or have it be denied. But if we can just hear, like in the example that I've given, how it's my insecurity that's thirsty. And it would be wonderful, you know, like so easy, just let it be thirsty. Let the fluidity be somewhere else. Let the drinking, quenching be somewhere else. And then that somewhere else has plenty of room and fluid and healing capacity for the insecurity, for the roots of the insecurity. So we haven't still gotten very far in the question.
You got one out of three.
In not even of wanting, yearning, desiring. In a way, we've also answered it, but not very overtly. There was a nun at the time of Gautam named Dhammadinna, and her ex-husband was asking her questions, and that conversation was recorded. And one of the questions was about if all unpleasant sensations are basically contrived, like if all of our, in a way, not only suffering but even pain, the unpleasantness of our experience, which we're talking about as suffering. So it could be painful but not bothering me. So that is all kinds of suffering contrived, conditioned, unnecessary. And she said, no, not all of them. There's one kind of pain and suffering that leads towards liberation, and that's the yearning for liberation. That's the feeling of, and she even goes into detail and says, when it's possible, like when I can see from people that I actually know or that are in my lifetime, in my very lifetime, who have turned the pot over. Like their work, their spiritual work is done. Why? When will I? So she even goes into that much detail. At least that's the way it's recorded. And so the possibility of being inspired by other people in a way that is, you know, the hard work would be that would tap the strings of what is possible, what can be, and my willingness to be moved there, instead of our usual comparing, competing, hating myself and them, because the lack hurts so much and I'm not willing to let go of the lack. So, yearning, check. So, I'm partly and totally joking that's all there would be to say about that. But in a way, yeah. If we can especially connect the sense of yearning for complete awakening, which she talks about as the unwinding, which I love, an unbinding, unwinding. With the Sufi metaphor of the scent. And so we have our ways that we see clues that help us and remind us to come back and give ourselves to ourselves and be moved and trust that other kind of knowing that recognizes this is food, this is not food. Byron Katie has a great statement that if we have a thought that hurts, it's not true. It's not true that it hurts. The fact that it hurts means the thought is untrue. So she says it just like that. And I would say it as more of a question. Mm-hmm. So if we could hear the sense of wanting for what it is in the context of our conversation today, it's like the husk, it's the shadow of something else. And if we can hear that it hurts because it's not true, the sense that my well-being depends on resolving this feeling that something's missing by getting something or getting rid of something. And if we stick to like, my well-being might depend on this, but somehow, in what way? My well-being depends on connecting to my well-being. Already okay. like this morning, the example of there's the migraine and there's something that doesn't have a migraine. We're fucked up and we're blessed. Somewhere. And again, like the cuteness in a way of thinking the way that we do when we're all entangled in our sense that of the inappropriate sense of responsibility, that we've got to resolve the sense of lack by getting something or getting rid of something. Fast, yeah. Is the experience of isolation. And it's true that there's a sense of something lacking when I have it, when I'm in disconnect. And so in a way, the sense of lack in the amoeba shift is the beginning or the tail end or the like, oh, that's not food. I know food smells somehow, but other than that. It's the beginning of knowing food. Or it's an aspect of knowing food. So again, like feeling what hurts as actually letting it feel painful is waking up our knowing, our slime mold knowing. But shifting out of the mood of it hurts, it hurts, it hurts, and giving enough time for that, the chemistry of it, of pain, to subside in our, I love food. And so wanting can be the tail end of yearning. If we want to define yearning the way I'm talking about it today. Following a scent that even when I'm busy arguing about something else, I'm being moved on that tide. Last thing. I think slowly, and it's not always going to work, but slowly, like with more friendliness and also more experiencing, like really coming in touch with what shame feels like and how it acts in the body and the kinds of things that shame, where it's, or it triggers you, something triggers you into shame, getting to know the patterns, even like conceptually, because sometimes the shame comes or any other overpowering emotion might come, and it can be really helpful to recognize the pattern conceptually and just kind of talk myself out of fully believing in it. And then there might be enough room to feel, okay, the cushion, the wind. And then again, maybe instead of the emphasis on I don't have connection, it can even just be, even if I really don't feel connection, but I would love to. And that's already in craniosacral they talk about there's the settling and then there's an alignment into something that they call the long tide. And I'll just end with this quotation. The long tide seems to arise from nowhere, with the nowhere in quotation marks. Manifests like a great wind arising within a vast field of action. And radiates through everything. the long tide, so like coming into alignment with something bigger than just my story of me, or especially my story of poor me or bad me or whatever, or greet me. me in time, like either I'm going to be finished later or I'm already finished, something like that. Then we come in touch with something. I usually talk about aliveness. And then we leave space and something moves through the space. The long tide seems to arise from nowhere, manifests like a great wind, arising within a vast field of action, and radiates through everything. It generates local ordering fields. So then it's like applying to the specific situation. There'll be that good idea that comes when I've let go of not wanting the not food and given myself to the knowing or being moved towards the sense of food. And then a good idea might come, or a good action might come from our center. That would be what they mean by generates a local ordering field, a new organically emerging recipe from the same ingredients. So the sense of lack, felt as dry as it is, helping us feel towards our drink that's really satisfying. So that can be the wanting and the yearning. And then the word desire, we could ask each of us, what would that mean to you, that word? Maybe in each person there could be so many meanings also. It's often the word that's like the villain, sort of in the Buddhist teaching. Desire would be often the word that would be like not allowed, would seem to be not allowed. And so I think it could be cool to leave that, like, okay, let's have some more time to feel, if you're interested at all, or if it just happens to pop up out of the quiet, something about, well, what does that word mean for me? What's the flavor, the perfume of that word? And maybe the so many different desires. Desire for liberation. Desire for physical touch. Desire for meeting. And maybe, for me, I would say it's pretty similar to wanting, but with the possibility of it being an opening through which the great wind moves, so a way of being moved towards what is really satisfying, so towards what I'm looking for and what I'm looking for. If I'm looking for you to reassure me, the reassurance would give me a chance to drop into myself, to give myself to myself. And from here, then to actually give myself to a bigger myself that includes a seemingly other person. And in that meeting, in the electricity and in the kind of vastness and mystery of that, it's more than satisfying. There's a creativity. There's a participation in I guess it's a kind of generosity. Something that gives more than it seemed like it could. The seemingly ordinary blossoming, unfolding in extraordinary ways. Mind-blowing. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the momentum of awakening for all, including ourselves.